This is the Business Storytelling Show, a top global marketing podcast listened to in more than 100 countries, live streamed on social media, and broadcast on DBTV. Christoph Trapp chats with industry leaders to help your company tell better business stories. Here's today's episode.
Hey, 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 Business Storytellers, episode 646 on tap here. Really excited to talk about today's topic. How do you actually know that you're creating successful content? So we're not talking about the actual act of creating content and what successful content is, debatable anyways, but how do we measure it? How do we actually know? And everything today should be data-driven. I mean, I always tell my guests, you know, how much speaking time they get. How do I know? They get 70%, I get 30%. But how do I know? I can look it up in Otter, right? Everything is measurable today. So we're going to be talking to Dana DiTommaso. She is the founder and lead instructor at Kickpoint Playbook. I believe she is actually in beautiful Victoria, Canada. And I was there speaking at a conference many years ago. Kind of difficult to get to, but definitely a fun trip. So let's get the party started here. Find out, how do you actually know? If you do want to connect with her, her website will be up at the bottom there, kpplaybook.com. Dana, nice to see you.
Hey, nice to see you too. And yes, Victoria is difficult to get to.
I'm pretty sure I had to fly to Seattle or something. Mm-hmm. And then there was like a little bitty flight there. But I took a tour around the area on a different plane, seaplane. So that was kind of beautiful. But it's been a number of years. But I'm sure people didn't tune in for our travel advice. So let's get started on talking about content. So how do you talk me through your process? How do people know that whatever it is they're doing is actually working?
Yeah, I find that when people first start working with us, they look at their content success in terms of leads generated, which is fine. That's one way to look at it. But the reality is you don't truly know how people are engaging with your content. And that is part of the success as well. Not every piece of content is necessarily going to lead directly to someone getting in touch with you or buying your stuff right away. So one of the ways you can determine if your content is successful is by actually looking at the metrics associated with it, which commonly people will look at page views and say, look how many page views it's got. This is great. But page views only tell you a very small part of the story. For example, right now, if I asked everyone listening to this, you know, how many tabs do you have open in this moment? They would probably answer more than one, right? Some people have 20. Some people never close their browsers anymore because they have so many tabs, they're terrified of losing them all. And if we think about how a lot of people use the internet, a lot of people have a lot of tabs open all the time. So if you're just looking at views, you're probably overcounting success because every time a tab becomes inactive to active, that might be recorded as a view. People might refresh, get halfway through a post, think, you know what, I'm going to come back to this later. Then it's a couple of views before they finish it. So one of the things that we started thinking about when we're measuring content success is not just the number of page views, but also how much of the post did they see? And did they spend long enough in the post to actually read the whole thing? Which, if it's a piece like video content, for example, you know, we're recording right now, we would know if people watch the video, we would know how far they got through it. Or if they listen to the podcast, you have tools that tell you exactly how far people got, where they dropped off. You know, if you look at your YouTube stats, where's the point that most people were engaged? Where's the point that people are fast forwarding to, right? We have all that data. But when it comes to the written word, we don't really have that kind of information. So there's a couple of different things that we look at, and this is all measured through Google Tag Manager, which then reports the data off to GA4 now in this case, because it's 2024, GA4 is what we've got. So we've invented a recipe called content consumption, which is a Google Tag Manager recipe or a WordPress plugin, and you can get that on our website, kpplaybook.com, under the resources. And what it does is it measures not just how long it would take to read that specific piece of content based on the word count, but if the person actually got to the bottom of the post as well. So if they spent long enough on the page and they saw the bottom of the post, then we would say that that content is consumed. If they just got to the bottom but didn't spend long enough, that they skimmed through it. If they spent long enough on the page but didn't see the bottom, they probably are hoarding the tab for later. And if neither of those things happened, then they just bailed. And so by separating these people into different buckets of people who abandoned, skimmers, hoarders, and consumers, then we can determine how engaging and successful that content is, not just in terms of lead volume, but in terms of, is this content actually capturing our users' attention? So that's one of the first major things that we measure when it comes to content.
It's just so interesting to me how, you know, content consumption like can also mean different things to different people and what they're trying to get out of it, right? I mean, I think show the other day, well, we talked about how content is designed, and I'm like, you know, some people read it, some people read the subheadlines, which is what I do, and then I dive into more if I need to. But how do you know they got out of the content what they needed to get out of? Is it just the consumption, or is it like a next step, or like are they coming back, or like, do you know what I mean? How do you combine all those weirdness things that you do?
Yeah. And I think with longer posts, I think an opportunity that people are really missing is the ability to provide a PDF download of your longer posts. It isn't something that we do yet on our website, but it is something that we have implemented for other clients, you know, Shoemaker's Children and all that. And what's nice about providing a PDF download is some people do prefer to read offline. You know, maybe they want to load that PDF into an e-reader. Maybe they want to print it. You know, some people still do print things. And I think by providing that PDF download, you're also removing this person's need to feel like they have to hang on to the tab forever as well. Something else as well that we do, and this is something that you actually see on the KP Playbook website, is all of our longer posts have an internal table of contents. It's always floating on the left-hand side. So if you are writing longer form content, don't make it difficult for people to engage with different pieces of their content. Because as you said, you're only really reading the subheads. Maybe you don't need to read the preamble on why. You just want to get to the meat of how do I fix this problem. So by including those subheads, we're not just making it easy for people to engage, but then we're also seeing if people click on those subheads. And then we can also see what section of the post is most engaging by measuring how many times different subheads are clicked on.
It's very interesting. And plus the subheads, sorry about my delay. I was looking if I have the PDF button on my website, and I don't have the PDF button, but I do have the email and the print button directly down there at the bottom for sharing.
Yeah, so you could definitely record people printing for sure if they're clicking the print button. And there's also, I've seen a Google Tag Manager recipe that uses HTML to record if they even like printed it by hitting, you know, Control P or Command P on a Mac to actually print the page as well. If you don't have a print friendly layout, you could use a recipe like that to track if people actually printing your pages. Other stuff too that I've recorded again via Google Tag Manager is if people are copying content on the page. This is really interesting for B2B type businesses and also businesses with a lot of technical information. So if you're doing some things that have like step files or CAD files or something like that, sometimes people will copy parts of technical specifications out of your content. And so again, you can record what content is copied by recording that in Tag Manager and then pushing that off to GA4. The only thing to keep in mind is that there is a 100 character limit. So you might not get the entire amount that someone has copied, but certainly you can get, you know, enough of it to know which pieces are most compelling to your audience and what they might be copying into, say, an RFP, for example.
Interesting. So, you know, I'm a content creator, a content strategist by heart, and I'm listening to you and I'm like, oh, that's great. That's great. That's great. That's great. Oh, I don't know how to do that. Who actually on a team would do all this, right? Like who, like do you, I personally think it's actually a good idea to have the people who do the content, whatever the strategy, the creation, the distribution, they do their thing. And yes, they should care about the metrics, but in my opinion, they shouldn't do the metrics because what some of them do, they'll just find the good metrics. They don't actually look at it like not their, you know what I mean? They don't look at it like it's not their thing. They look at it, it's my baby, where's the positive story? So somebody else should do, but how do you feel about that? And then some of the things you mentioned, I would say they're pretty technical. They go way deeper than logging into Google Analytics and taking a look at what's there out of the box.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people underestimate their ability to do these technical things. Like I have a degree in geography. You know, I don't I'm not a programmer. I did not start out as a developer. So I think that part of it is looking at this and thinking, you know, it's there's recipes available on the internet to copy this stuff. So for example, for content consumption, we walk you through exactly how to set this up step by step. And if you're using WordPress, it's even easier. It does require using Tag Manager. And if you haven't used Tag Manager before, that might feel a little intimidating, but unfortunately, especially for Google Analytics 4, while GA4 does record more stuff out of the box than Universal Analytics did, you really still do need Tag Manager in order to unlock the full potential of the stuff that you could be recording in GA4. So it is something that I do recommend that people learn at some point, even just for the basics. And a lot of the tutorials do walk you through step by step on how to do this. And something that we're working on a playbook website is making, because some of the tutorials, I agree, are a bit more technical. So we are working on taking those and making them. Yeah. Here's where the original recipe was. Here's our non-technical step by step exactly how to implement this stuff. So I find that Tag Manager seems really intimidating. It looks technical. It's clearly designed by developers, you know, it isn't necessarily good for the end user. But once you learn how tags and triggers work together, there is a lot you can do with it. And I think that people just don't know of the possibilities of what they can do with it once they, you know, get over perhaps their intimidation of Google Tag Manager.
Yeah, I mean, everything takes time. So hopefully, I mean, I'm sure it's going to get easier and better over time, too. I mean, still remember my fun story is when Grammarly first came out, I thought, oh, what a bunch of garbage. And I don't know what was bad about it or whatever, but I just remembered it didn't really work into my workflow. And today I couldn't live without it, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. So certainly things will get better over time. The next question I'd like to talk about for a moment is how do you even come up with what the goal should be? And I'll give you a quick example. Mm-hmm. I was looking at a company's website, and again, I'm not an analytics guy, but I certainly like to know where things stand. And so I look at this website and I go, your bounce rate is really low. I'm not sure I've ever seen a bounce rate this low in your industry. So what they had done is basically they extended the page. Mm-hmm. And so instead of having to click, you basically just stayed on the same page. That is, I'm not sure I explained that exactly correctly, but that's basically the concept. So it was like one page as opposed to two pages. You know what I mean? Nobody would ever, I mean, it would take forever to bounce. And I don't know. Like, I don't know if that was like they're gaming the system just a little bit, because at the end of the day, you know, it would have been or not. But how do you know what to even look for? And then how do you implement that?
Oh, yeah. Bounce rate is such a garbage metric. I was when GA4 first came out, it didn't have bounce rate, and I was very excited about it. And then they added it back in. But bounce rate, let me explain what bounce rate was measuring in Universal Analytics. I don't think a lot of people know what it was doing. They would think, as you would think, people went on the website, they didn't do anything, they left. That's a bounce. But the thing is, if you weren't recording an event, so let's say you're on your website and you click a link to go get the podcast on Spotify, for example. If you weren't recording when people clicked external links on your website, that person would have counted as a bounce, even though they did something that you wanted them to do. And in the cases where a website had a very low bounce rate, they probably were gaming the system, as you mentioned. I've seen cases where they would send an event off to Universal Analytics, you know, half a second, basically after the page loaded, which would make it look like there was almost a 0% bounce rate. You know, it's very easy to game bounce rate. So bounce rate in Universal Analytics, not measuring anything good, total garbage, pretend it didn't happen. I'm sorry if you were using it in your reporting. Bounce rate in GA4 is fine, but it's not the best metric you could use. Bounce rate is an inverse of another metric called engagement rate. Engagement rate is a pretty good metric. Engagement rate is measuring slightly different stuff, and it measures more engagement, hence the name. So what engagement rate is measuring is if someone came to your website and it's their first visit to the site, or they visited a second page, or they converted, or they spent at least 10 seconds with your tab as their active tab. And you can increase that 10 seconds up to as much as 60 seconds in the GA4 admin. So engagement rate is what you should look at. And what I find really interesting is looking at engagement rate by channel and by landing page. So you can see, for example, you know, this Google Ads display campaign we're running has an engagement rate of 20%. Meanwhile, our organic traffic has an engagement rate of 80%. Clearly, the organic traffic is more effective. What can we do to bring up that engagement rate with display? Is it a mismatch between the ads that we're showing and the landing page we're sending them to? You know, does this landing page in general have a low engagement rate? How can we increase that? And so thinking about it, 10 seconds may not seem like a lot of time, but on the internet, it is quite a lot of time. So if you open up that landing page and you look at it for 10 seconds, are you seeing the answer that your ad is promised? And if you're not, people are probably bailing after 5 or 6 seconds, which is why this page would have a low engagement rate. So again, there is bounce rate, but it's the inverse of engagement rate. So if your engagement is 80%, your bounce rate is 20%. So if you try to match up bounce rate between Universal Analytics and GA4, if it matches, it is merely a coincidence. The two metrics are not measuring the same thing at all, even though they are named the same. very confusing. So look at engagement rate in GA4, by channel, by source medium, by campaign, look at it by landing page. And that's going to tell you a lot more about your website than bounce rate ever did in Universal Analytics.
You know, I can already see the audience members that are screaming at the screen and are saying, but why does the engagement rate matter? And of course, my answer is the more people are listening. So let's say this is a branded podcast, which it's not, but you know, we're selling a service or whatever. More people listen, the longer you listen, the deeper you go, the more likely you are to buy something from me, right? Or if I'm a creator podcast, which this is really what this is, right? The more people listen, the deeper they go, the more I can charge for sponsorship, the more I can charge for all these different things. So there is a direct tie to a business reason, right? It's not just, oh, it's nice, people are sticking around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think of it as like the quality of the content, you know, which is why I mentioned display traffic, because display traffic typically isn't necessarily high quality content, especially if you're not doing a great job with targeting. And so looking at your engagement rate, even on like a buy ad basis, can tell you if that ad is bringing the right kind of people to your website. Because again, we're trying to get away from the idea of volume being the thing that matters. You know, a great example that I often tell is we had a client who had a, you know, once post-COVID, what should you do when you go back to the gym if you haven't been going back to your gym for a while because you were at home because of COVID? You know, how can you go back to the gym and not injure yourself right away? It's a physiotherapist based in Edmonton, Alberta. And this post suddenly got a ton of traction and it had page views from all over the world. These people were not going to see a physiotherapist in Edmonton, Alberta if they're located in, say, the United Kingdom. But so if we just reported on page views, we'd be like, wow, look at your site. It's incredible. It's up, you know, 2000% or whatever. But that isn't actually real because these people aren't going to book an appointment with him, which is the point of the website. So really thinking beyond those vanity metrics. And what we ended up doing for him is we looked at the location of people. Now, location isn't always 100% accurate either, especially with browsers like Safari, which have some privacy detection built in. But certainly in terms of broad strokes, if we said we're only going to grab the people who look like they're located in, you know, Northern Alberta within a certain radius, kilometer radius of your location, and we're going to see how many people are viewing that page on your site, and we're going to ignore everybody else, and we can do this using audiences in Google Analytics 4 and just exclude everyone who isn't necessarily located close to him, then we can, in our reports, only look at that audience when it comes to reporting on things like conversions. Because obviously all these people aren't converting, they're engaging with the content, but they aren't booking an appointment. And so if you then started reporting conversion rate, you'd be like, wow, this conversion rate is garbage because you've got all these people who aren't going to book an appointment. If you remove them from the equation and say, you know, here's our focus in terms of booking appointments. And hey, by the way, this is neat. This post is doing really, really well. But report on them as two separate entities. Then you're not saying to the client, look at all these page views, but your conversion rate has gone down the toilet. You're saying your conversion rate is good because we're driving the right people to this post. And also just as a fun FYI, this post is doing really, really well worldwide, which is always, you know, exhilarating for someone to learn when they read, when they write a piece of content and seeing that it's getting that worldwide reach, right? So really thinking about separating out your different metrics into what matters for business goals and then, you know, fun things if you want to report on that, but really trying to eliminate the noise and focus in on, you know, the signal part of the reporting.
You know, I had a similar case way back when I was in healthcare, and it was basically an OB article that went viral. Mm-hmm. I mean, it did worldwide. And certainly somebody in Romania is not going to go have their baby in Texas, right? So that traffic in theory is, well, not in theory, it is relatively irrelevant. But the other thing I noticed is when something goes viral everywhere, it also goes viral wherever you actually care it to go viral.
Exactly.
So that's something to keep in mind. Now, you said volume doesn't matter. And I was like, okay, yep, I agree with that. And then I'm thinking, all right, but the right volume is important, right? To get the right people.
Yeah.
How do you know you have the right people?
Yeah, volume with context is really important. And I think that that's where people don't necessarily think about that context. And that's where we use audiences a lot in GA4. And if audiences are something you haven't explored yet in GA4, I really recommend that you do. I have a link on, if you search my name and Moz Whiteboard Friday, there's a post about GA4 audiences that we can also get linked to on the website, where I talk about the different ways you can use audiences. But audiences are a way of sort of segmenting down the people who are coming to your website and saying, this is the people I care about. So then you can look at that volume in terms of, you know, geography, people who are only reasonably able to go to this physiotherapist, for example, ignore everybody else. Or another client of ours who's a convention center. We have people coming to the convention center website to look up set times for a band that's going to be playing or where the nearest parking is. Those people aren't going to book events. So we have really strong segmentation between the people who are just looking at parking and set times and whatnot to the actual event planners and wedding planners who are likely to book something in that space. And by separating that out and thinking about volume with that context applied, then we can really make smarter marketing decisions because we're not listening to, oh, wow, look at this. This ad drove all these views. Well, no one cares because that's not making you any money. And then you can really get beyond the idea of just sheer volume. You know, if you think about it like, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we have this analytics hierarchy of, you know, just looking at volumetrics with context, you know, then looking at metrics with context and also following them through the sales funnel. So it is really that first step that you take when you're getting away from just sheer volume and then applying that context to be able to make smarter marketing decisions.
The context certainly is important. And yeah, I mean, it's so difficult in my opinion. I mean, it's so much easier when someone just walks into your store if you have a physical location and buy something and you can figure it out. But on the web, as you said, you know, people all over the place, and they also might be in different parts of the funnel, right? Where if they leave right away, you know, and they just became aware of you, maybe they weren't ready to buy, right? But they might be down the road. So just something to think about.
Oh, yeah, too. And I always say to people, like, think about how you use the internet. You know, you are thinking about buying something. You get the website link. You send it to your spouse in, like, Facebook chat or via text message. They click on the link. That referrer is totally gone now. You have no idea as the website owner where that person actually came from. It just shows up as direct. If they buy something at that point, how are you going to know? So also accept that analytics is far from perfect. And you're going to have those kinds of weird situations. There's very few people who are like, okay, I saw this ad. I'm going to click on this ad. Or I saw this search result. I'm clicking on the search result. I go on the website. I make sure to complete my purchase within the 30-minute session timeout window. So I make sure that they've got a clear referrer path from start to finish, right? Like that doesn't, sometimes that happens, but not all the time. And so I think as well, there's certainly a lot of people think that we can measure everything in analytics, and what you see in analytics is the reality of, but there's too much noise and messiness in terms of how people use the web on a day-to-day basis for us to say, yes, absolutely, that is the answer. And I think one of the reasons why people didn't trust GA4 when it first came out is because GA4 did a better job of showing those inaccuracies to people. And so they were like, well, this isn't a good product. Well, it's a good product. It's actually showing you the things that are wrong now, where UA kind of hit it a little bit.
Time always flies when you have fun. Really appreciate you coming on the show. My last bit of advice would be just close all those tabs. I actually turn my computer, I restart it every day. And the reason why is because I got this popping up and that popping up, and that just stays on the desktop until I close it. And honestly, it's just easier at the end of the day to just restart it and everything goes away and you can open stuff you need for the next day. Really appreciate you coming on the show. 30 seconds or so. Tell us who are your perfect clients, who should reach out to you, and anything else you'd like to leave us with.
Yeah. So if you check out kpplaybook.com, it's our learning site. We have workshops that we offer to GA4 for small or large or really any size in between companies. We also have a course, Analytics for Agencies. If you're an agency and you're struggling with analytics, definitely check that out. And if you sign up for our newsletter in kpplaybook.com, we have a GA4 only course that's going to be coming out in March. If you sign up for our newsletter, you're going to get a really steep discount when that is available for pre-sale, probably late next month. And LinkedIn is generally.
Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review the Business Storytelling Show on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode.